Welcome to the fourth and final week of the Neighboring Toolkit Sunday School Podcast. I'm still your host, Matthew Johnson. Last week, we looked more closely at the neighboring ingredient of abundance. This week, we look at the ingredient of joy. As with previous sessions, most of the content for this recording comes from the podcast, The Neighbor Next Door. So occasionally, we'll reference other episodes of that podcast. If you're interested in that podcast, you can listen to it for free on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. And now, let's dive into joy. Hello, and welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast where we invite awesome neighbors onto the front porch to tell stories about neighboring so that we can understand the power and importance of being a good neighbor. I am joined again on the front porch by my colleague in neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Hello, good neighbors. Welcome to the front porch. Welcome.
Wow. Well, that seems...
Some smooth jazz on underneath this episode of Joy.
This is the third episode in a series on the three ingredients of neighboring. The three ingredients are abundance, relationship, and joy. Mm-hmm. And in episode 6, we talked about abundance. In episode 8, we talked about relationship. Mm-hmm. And here we are to talk about joy.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we've got a caveat.
Yeah, there was something crazy happened to me this morning before we started recording this.
Yeah.
A friend texted me. She was in this conversation, and we're talking about theology, and she said, we really should focus on abundance and people's giftedness. And then somebody in the conversation responded, yeah, except for whenever I hear the word abundance, I think of Joel Osteen. And then everybody in the group started nodding their heads.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to be like, if you don't know who Joel Osteen is,
yeah,
let's start there.
Let's start there, because
he is a mega church preacher, mm-hmm. and he's known for the prosperity gospel, mm-hmm. which is basically like, if you believe hard enough, mm-hmm. then God will bless you by giving you wealth.
Yeah.
Which
is really icky.
Just if you were wondering, not what we were trying to say
right
with all of this. But there is a pushback that actually no one's ever verbalized to us, but we've felt because, you know, Matt and I, a couple of middle-class white dudes.
Right.
And we're not just saying like, hey, like you should just like believe hard enough and then you have abundance. Mm-hmm. Or if you just, even though you're sad, like you should just be happy.
Right.
And have joy.
Right. Because when we talk about abundance... The other word that I use is enough.
Yes.
That there is enough. But part of that, it's really about saying, start with what you do have.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't sell yourself short.
Exactly. Yes.
And then beyond that, you can partner with people and...
And it's also... So, and with both of these, abundance, joy, and really even relationship, part of the reason that we are clinging to them is because of the people we've learned them from, mm-hmm. who are people like Desmond Tutu and Dalai Lama, mm-hmm. and Dorothy Day, and like, yeah. people in our lives or in like theological heroes and philosophical heroes of ours who are people who've endured incredible suffering.
Right.
And through their suffering, still been able to cling to these three ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, that's why we're promoting them, but it gets distorted through our privilege a little bit, I think, if you're not careful.
Yes.
And so then it comes off as like, well, I know you're oppressed, but don't you know you should be happy?
Right.
And so I don't want that to ever come across. Well, for abundance with me, abundance is about a mindset of the world has more good than bad in it.
Mm-hmm. And we start with the gifts.
And like the narrative of the world asks you to do the opposite.
Yes.
So that's part of it, is just like, it's an approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a like wealth management plan or something.
If we do a podcast on wealth management, don't listen to it.
No, that was bad.
That's not our thing.
Yeah. And then with joy, we, you know, happiness is kind of the, so if we separate out joy and happiness a little bit,
yeah,
then that is helpful. Mm-hmm. So like happiness is, I had the best affogato last night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those are really delicious.
They're so good.
Yeah.
It's espresso, homemade, or not homemade, but like, you know, homemade in a store. Ice cream, little coffee shop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was just delicious, and I was really happy.
Yes. So I tend to think of happiness as being very external.
Right.
It's
like
about
an affogato.
Yeah. Yeah, that affogato was not within you to begin with. It was it was its entrance.
Eventually, I put it in my mouth, and then it was in the...
That's right.
Happiness is that momentarily external something is pleasing to me.
Yes, whereas joy is this, it's an inner reality.
Right.
And it can include both happiness, but it also can include sorrow and struggle.
Right. It's really more about like, I'm rooted and comfortable with myself and able to like approach the world from like a centered place, mm-hmm. and not get pulled off by other people's stuff and like be with them in whatever moment is happening.
Yeah.
So we have a quote from Desmond Tutu that kind of talks about that. Mm-hmm. This is from the Book of Joy, which... we kind of were joking before we started recording, but that people should just stop listening to this and go read the Book of Joy.
Yeah, it is so good.
It would really be more worth your while. So here's the quote. If you don't go read it, you can at least get this part. This is from Desmond Tutu, who is a person who's experienced a lot of suffering in his life.
Yeah.
And so he says, discovering more joy does not save us from the inevitability of hardship and heartbreak. In fact, we may cry more easily, but we will laugh more easily too. Perhaps we are just more alive. Yet as we discover more joy, we can face suffering in a way that ennobles rather than embitters. We have hardship without becoming hard. We have heartbreaks without being broken.
Mm. Mm.
And that is just beautiful to me. And I get that, like, so like when I've been with people who are suffering, right? And you can tell people who have joy as mm-hmm. like who have that inner joy, even in the midst of their suffering, there's something beautiful in it.
Yeah.
And you can see it.
Yeah, you can see, I think, the nobility of the human spirit.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of, I think about a woman that I knew many years ago who was, she was dying of cancer. They knew, like, mm-hmm. they had stopped treatment. Visiting her, you know, and she had lived a full life. I walked in, I was very young. I think I was in my early 20s. I was so nervous and anxious. Like, what am I going to say? I have no idea. I'm so afraid for her.
Right.
And she was not afraid. Like, the strength of her spirit shone through, even though her body was breaking down and she was getting weak. Like, she had this joyfulness.
Yeah, or like our friend whose son was killed in a with gun violence.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's, I can't even like imagine the terror and how awful that is. And when he talks about it, it's painful.
Yeah.
And I see joy in him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where it's like, it's kind of like it blows my mind of like what I kind of always thought of, you know, like, oh, well, if you're joyful, you're not sad.
Mm-hmm.
If you're joyful, you're not in pain. Mm-hmm. If you're joyful, you're not. And that's not, it's not it.
Yeah. Just to circle back, you and I have not suffered.
Oh, God.
Like Desmond
not
Tutu.
Even close.
Yeah.
Like any of the stories we just shared, I'm trying to think of like the most suffering I've had. It's like I had a bad hangnail a couple of weeks ago, like went all the way back and bled.
Yeah, I mean, those are bad.
Those are painful. I couldn't play. It was messing up my banjo playing.
Mm. I couldn't tell.
Okay.
I gotcha. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've lost loved ones and
sure,
you know, friends and things like that. I mean, but yeah, all in all, my life has right. just been a trajectory of getting good yeah. things. And we really want to point people back to Desmond Tutu and yes. the Dalai Lama.
Who say, by the way, that the goal is not to like compare suffering with people. Mm. Because if you're going to compare suffering with people, it's a race to the bottom and everybody loses.
Yes.
And so that's not helpful. And so the goal is not to do that, but the goal is to allow our suffering to connect us together and mm-hmm. to connect us to kind of these deeper realities of life and this inner joy that we're hoping to cultivate.
So joy, we include joy as one of the ingredients of neighboring. And as I was thinking about this, I thought there's two reasons for that. One is because joy for us has been a natural result of abundance, meaning focusing on gifts. Like when we started mm-hmm. asking people to talk about the things that they love to do, there is a joyfulness that comes out of folks.
Right.
I remember one of the first neighbor conversations I had, and I asked the woman, have you ever thought about starting your own business? And she was like, yeah, mm-hmm. I've always wanted to start my own bakery. And like, she immediately invited my friend and I into her house mm-hmm. to sit down on her couch. And then she just talked and talked about her bakery dream.
Right.
And she was so joyful.
Yeah. When you go in looking for gifts and focused on relationship, it's kind of feels like it is a natural kind of equivalent or like, you know, conclusion to those things is that it becomes this moment filled with joy.
Yeah. Which is actually a great segue to the other reason that we include joy as an ingredient of neighboring.
Oh, yeah?
And that is that joy is also a good guide for people.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So when you're thinking about how to neighbor, think about what makes you joyful.
Right.
And then do that.
And if you have this experience of like this annual thing that you do, as mm-hmm. part of like your church or your block, maybe your block does a neighborhood block party and it's an annual thing.
Yeah.
And everybody who volunteers to help with it is miserable and hates it, but they keep doing it anyways.
Yeah.
That's a good sign that maybe uh-huh. that thing needs to not happen anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you spend your energy there, you're blocking any type of space for something new to give birth to. Mm-hmm. And so grieve that and then look for ways that you can be joyful. So this is actually, we've connected being free to fail
yeah.
to joy.
Yes.
Because it's a way of saying, I'm going to let go of things that aren't working. I'm going to celebrate that they happened mm-hmm. and that I learned from them. And then I'm going to go and look for things that are joyful and try those.
Yes.
Which is harder. It's easier said than done because some people have very emotional ties to like an event or, you know, something mm-hmm. that you've been doing for a long time. And it's hard to say, well, it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people can have really strong ties to their ideal of, you know, the good neighbor.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, well, if I'm a good neighbor, I have to host 8 block parties a year.
Mm-hmm.
Or, the truth is that, like, for some people, hosting a block party is as easy as pie, and it's joyful for them.
Yeah.
It's super energizing because they pull out the fire pit.
Right.
They're playing cornhole, and
It's a block party. Right.
For others, and I fit into this category.
Right.
Neighboring is much quieter. Like, it's not natural for me to like do the extroverted thing.
Yeah.
I can, and I do some, but what really energizes me is the smaller interactions. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I focus on.
Yeah.
Our scripture for this week is Luke 17, verses 11 through 19. And once again, I'll be reading from the New Revised Standard Version. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." and as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." The Bible is constantly calling us to give thanks. In fact, that phrase is used about 35 times in the Bible. And what I love about this story is that it gives us a snapshot of a person actually fulfilling that commandment. When this person who had leprosy saw that he was healed, he turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He fell down at Jesus' feet and thanked him. I don't know if there is significance to the fact that there were 10 lepers and only one returned, but I do relate to it statistically. It seems like 9 out of 10 times, I don't think to say thank you to God. It seems like 90% of the time, I'm just rushing on to the next thing. But again, the constant commandment is to give thanks. We've brought this scripture in because it illustrates the practice of gratitude, and gratitude is one way that we can actually cultivate joy. We cannot discover joy by seeking joy out. Instead, we discover it when we practice gratitude. And we, as Christians, have the added gift of serving a God who is active in our lives and the world. We have someone to direct our gratitude towards. And let's be clear, that commandment to give thanks isn't because God is insecure and needs for us to grovel. No, I think it's because God knows that we will grow into joyfulness if we will practice gratitude. So even the command is an expression of God's love for all of us.
All right, so how do people get to be joyful? That's the question here.
Yeah, so a really helpful concept to me is that it happens indirectly. So first thing is, don't just grit your teeth and try to be joyful, right? Like,
that's so good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tempting to do that.
Uh-huh.
So instead, what we want to talk about are practices that we can do that just help cultivate joyfulness.
Right.
And there's so many practices.
Yeah.
We've got a few that we'll share. So practice number one is celebrating. So celebrating, and we know what celebrating is, right? I mean, an event, anniversaries, graduations, holidays.
Yeah, we get it, Matt.
That's
a long list there, dude. We get it.
There were four things there. That was only four.
Oh, okay. But, it felt like it was really long.
So anyway, so we've got to celebrate those things because then that helps us remember who we are and what we've accomplished.
Absolutely. And we often skip over things that we should be celebrating.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And part of this leads into one of the other ones that's on our list here, which is gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Which gratitude, they kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So like we've been practicing, this was a suggestion from the Book of Joy, to do a gratitude journal and think of things in your day that you want to be grateful for. Mm. And each of those are really little mini celebrations. And they're like, you know, tiny things that maybe have just went by really quickly, but then you're rethinking about them again and trying to celebrate those. So
Yeah. Which actually, just yesterday, there was a great blog from Seth Godin.
Yeah.
Seth is one of my favorite bloggers.
Mm-hmm.
Just really great thinker. So I encourage you to check out his blog. He posts every single day. And this is his blog from yesterday. The title of the blog was, "You Made My Day."
Mm.
Right? So you know that phrase, right?
Yeah.
"Hey, you made my day." And then he said, "When your day gets made, how long does it last?" A made day, is that different from a normal day?
Yeah.
Perhaps it would be more accurate to call it a made hour, or if we're going to be quite truthful, a made minute, right? Like, hey, Adam, you made my minute.
Yes, that's anyway. Right.
And then he says, when something bad happens, this is where it gets really powerful. When something bad happens, we can revisit the humiliation and anxiety for months. But the good stuff, if we don't work at it, can pass right by.
Yes.
We get what we remember, and we remember what we focus on.
It's so good.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's so good. So here's what made my day yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was working at the library for a little bit because I had just like a little bit of time before I had to go pick up Prescott from a camp that was right near the library. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working at the library, and there is a little like computer lab-ish type thing. And there's a library staff person teaching this elderly woman how to use Microsoft Excel.
Yes.
And the whole thing was just so endearing. Yep. And I was close enough that I could overhear them. And, you know, if you've ever tried to teach someone how to use a computer program that you know really well, like, mm-hmm. I'm terrible at that.
Yeah.
I'm so not patient enough for that kind of work.
Yeah.
But he was so... like gracious with her, and also like, what does this lady need to know Microsoft Excel for? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, but mm-hmm. like, it's just cool that she's like, you know, probably in her 70s and like, nah,
yeah,
I'm gonna go learn Microsoft Excel now.
Right.
It just made my day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I've given gratitude to it, it's coming back up now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I do want to circle back to gratitude and just also mention, because you can do one way of practicing gratitude on a neighborhood level mm-hmm. is to spend time thinking about the good, like what are the good things in your neighborhood? Think about the parks and the features, like in our neighborhood, we have old trees mm-hmm. that are really beautiful. Think about the businesses that are in your neighborhood that you like or in your community. And of course the people, you know, so focusing on that, I think is a way of practicing gratitude on a community level.
Right.
That I think is really powerful.
Yeah. And then we also encourage people just to find moments where they can be playful.
Yeah.
So like Sunday we went over and Matt got the neighbor's dog, and we took our dog and our son, and we went over to the open lot near us and just mm-hmm. threw a ball at each other.
Yes.
And that's what we did. And it was just fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the first, like, sort of warm day we've had in a long time, and so it was good just to play.
Yeah.
And that's why we play music so much, mm-hmm. is because it's just joyful.
Yeah. Play is not something that I am naturally gifted at. I don't lean that way. I tend to be pretty, but it's really freeing.
Super buttoned up and serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. He's wearing a full suit right now.
Can you imagine how goofy that would look?
I don't think I've ever seen you wear a suit, actually.
Yeah.
Have you ever worn a tie?
What, in my life?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You should see my senior pictures.
Oh, my God. Can we just put a link to that in the comments or something?
Know.
Or the description?
I don't know if any of them exist anymore. I have like this tailor-made $800 suit.
What?
That I wore to my high school graduation.
Matt, you...
silk tie and Italian loafers.
I am going to email Glenna and be like, can you help me find this? It's for a project we're working on.
It's called Embarrass Your Son.
It's called project. Joy. Is what it's called.
That's right. Well, but it's true. So part of play, what makes something playful is that it's unpredictable and it may be embarrassing, but the stakes are low, right?
Yeah.
So being able to just laugh at yourself.
Right. That's why we're so joyful in this podcast, because the stakes are so low.
Exactly. I mean... Well, friends, I hope that some of this joyfulness is contagious, that you're catching it.
That's right. Also, don't forget to stop listening to these podcasts and go read the Book of Joy.
I mean, they made it this far. I don't know why.
Stop. The last minute's not worth it. Cut it out.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has been a production of The Neighboring Movement. You can learn more about our work by visiting our website, neighboringmovement.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Neighboring Movement. We hope that you will like and share this podcast with other folks, because we think that the Neighboring Movement needs to be spread. We want people all over the place reaching out and connecting with the people around them to help shape the world and make it a better place.
Special thanks to our intern.
Yeah, intern number 5.
Who does some editing. That's right. I'm not even going to try to say his name anymore.
I mean, he doesn't say his name anymore.
That's right. He doesn't. He signs all of his emails now.
Yes.
Sometimes intern number 5, sometimes just number 5.
It's so taken hold.
If you want to know his name, you can go back to a previous episode.
There you go.
And listen to that.
Thanks for joining us on the front porch. Happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.
Do that for a while.
Yeah.